Hi, welcome back to the Wavy Podcast. It's certainly been a few minutes. Very simply, I just lost inspiration once again. I believe the last episode that came out was in February, if I'm not mistaken. But pretty much, we were just locked down. It was winter. I was just over it. And how much creativity can you have, and how much can you have to talk about going into a second lockdown and living in a basement apartment? It just was very draining creatively. So I decided to step away, and then the creativity is it's back, and it's great. So this time I'm back recording from my couch, very casual vibe, not putting too much pressure on myself as we come back. But this is going to be a split episode. The first half is going to be my back to concert tips. Things are back to normal. We're heading back to shows. It's great, but I thought I'd offer some tips. And then the second half of this episode is going to be an interview with Keys and Crates, who just dropped a brand new album called Original Classic. But let's get into these back to concert tips. And just before I get into this, just want to say thank you all for being so patient. I'm so happy that I have a little audience here, and I'm really grateful for all of you listening. So let's get into these back to concert tips. Number one, understand the risk of buying tickets right now. I'm not trying to be a pessimist. The last couple of years almost have been quite the struggle in terms of lockdown, and I think that things have been pretty unpredictable. So I'm just saying, when you buy a ticket, be aware of the risk in that financially. Like, be prepared that the show might not happen, just because I think things are so unpredictable. But yeah, I don't know. The last, I guess, year and a half, I had some tickets, bought some tickets, and unfortunately couldn't attend those shows. Unfortunately, couldn't get a refund right away. So just understand the risk with that. But then again, I think skies are looking as clear as ever, so the risk is not as bad as it once was. But all right, tip number two, go see openers. Yes, this is how I've discovered a ton of my favorite artists. Make an effort to go see the openers. You never know who you're gonna get. You never know what hidden gem you are going to discover. You could discover the next Billie Eilish for all we know. That is one act I regret not seeing. Not exactly an opener situation. However, she was at Oceaga a few years ago before she popped off. I did not make the effort to see her set, and that is one I regret not seeing, because I would have loved the opportunity to see her in on a smaller stage. So it's a great way to discover new talent, discover some new music. Okay, tip number three, coat check. If you bring a coat, if you do coat check, which you likely will if you live in Toronto as we approach the winter cold sadness for the next many months. Here's a tip about coat check. If you do coat check, when it comes to the last couple songs, head towards the back of the venue. Right before the last song. And I'm not saying skip the last song. Okay, if you're really in a rush, just skip the last song and go get your coat. If you're not in a rush, head towards the back of the venue, enjoy that last track, and then you'll pretty much be first in line for coat check when the time is right, and you'll be out and on your way to enjoy the rest of your night with, no delays. So And you might be thinking, oh, how am I supposed to know it's the last song? Well, you can check out websites like setlist.fm, and basically you can go look up the artist, check out the most recent sets that they've played. Sometimes they're playing the same set every night. Sometimes they're not playing the same set, but they're playing the same amount of songs. Point is, you can get a rough guesstimate of when that's going to be. Or sometimes, you know, the artist will say, this is my last song. A lot of the time they will say that. But if you want to be ahead of the game, that's the way. Okay, tip number three, dress accordingly per venue. I can't stress this enough. If you're going to like a greasy, divey bar, you are probably going to want to wear something a bit cooler. And I'm not saying don't wear a jacket. I'm just saying think about what you're wearing under the jacket. You probably don't want to wear like a fuzzy long sleeve top. It's just important to be comfortable and enjoy the show as much as possible. And if you're not dressed accordingly, that can really mess with your night. If you're going to like, you know, a more upscale venue, for instance, like Scotiabank Arena or something, there definitely is room to just wear whatever you want to wear because, you know, there's not really any issues with like crowds or temperature really. So just be considerate of that when you are picking out your outfit. Tip number five, if you are tall and want to stand in front, you can do that. Just maybe stand to the side because for us shorties, that's pretty frustrating when we can't see because there's someone really tall standing in front. So you can still enjoy that. Just stand to the side because you're less likely to block someone's view. And, you know, this is kind of a double tip, but if you're short and you want to be in the front, try to arrive early because it's kind of annoying for everybody in the crowd when people are just like aggressively pushing through to get to the front. So if that's what you want, arrive early. And then if you don't arrive early, you know, you can make a little fib. You can like, you know, sneak by some people and say, oh, excuse me, I'm just meeting my friend or I'm trying to find my cousin. You know, you can do one of those. I'm not saying that's ethical necessarily, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't do that every now and again. Okay, tip number six, wear the comfiest shoes possible. Avoid boots with heels. You know, that's not comfortable. I've made that mistake a couple times. If you're just trying to look cute for a photo or something, you know, just take a pic before. Like, just don't wear uncomfortable shoes because you're just going to regret it. Probably a few songs in, you're probably going to be pretty uncomfortable and moody. And like, that's just not a good time. You know, you're spending good money on your concert tickets. You should enjoy it and be as comfortable as possible. So wear comfy shoes. Tip number six, find a good companion or go alone and make new friends. I can't stress this enough. You know, it's definitely important to have someone who is just as interested in the music as you. It can really make a break or night to have a good friend there. And if you can't find someone good to go with you or someone who's interested, consider going alone. There's nothing wrong with enjoying concerts alone from time to time, or even going alone and trying to make some new friends. I recently went to see Tops by myself at Lee's Palace. I didn't make any friends. I felt kind of awkward. Keep in mind, this was actually my first full capacity concert I was attending. Like, it was my first time in normalcy. I definitely felt a little anxious, a little awkward. I was like just standing there by myself and I was like, what do I do with my arms? What do I do with myself? It didn't seem like a crowd that really wanted to be friends. I was kind of like standing there and hoping like someone would come up to me and like talk to me, you know, but no one did. But it's okay. Honestly, point being, I enjoyed the show. It was a good time. I'm so happy I went. And like, if you can't find anyone to go to a show with, just go by yourself because you're going to regret it if you don't. And take it from me, like, even though I felt kind of awkward going by myself, I'm still so happy I went because it was such a good show. I've been wanting to see them for like a long, long time. And, you know, once the show started, it didn't really matter that I was by myself. Everybody, like, no one is like staring at you thinking, oh my God, why is that girl by herself? Like, I saw several other people who were definitely alone as well. Like, everybody is there to enjoy the show. Everybody's too busy worrying about themselves. So, you know, just go by yourself and enjoy it. Don't miss out. There's so many times where I've regretted not going because I didn't want to go by myself or whatever. But it's really not that bad. It's really not. So, yeah. I don't know if this is tip number six or seven, but I'm just going to stop counting and just move on to the next tip. So another tip that is important to me, I don't know if it's as important to other people, but have something in mind for your after show snack strategy, there's a 90% chance you're going to be hungry after, but the snacks are key. Like, you were just in a crowd of people. It was probably warm. You were probably dancing. Maybe not, but you were definitely standing on your feet for a few hours. You need some food to make up for that. Plan out your route. Are you going to hit up a bar nearby after? Which bar is it going to be? Do you want to save your money and not buy Uber Eats when you get home? Maybe consider making a snack earlier that day, something you can look forward to, and then you can come home and eat that and save your money. Plan it out. Trust me, it's more important than you think. And don't go to bed hungry. Treat yourself. Enjoy your night. Have a good snack. And yeah, I just have a couple more tips to finish this off. So if there's a concert you really want to go to and you find the tickets are a bit pricey, you can push it to the last minute because you're probably going to get it below face value if you check out some scalper websites. I never really barter with scalpers in person. Like, I don't just show up to a show without a ticket. That's just too scary for me. But you can check out websites like StubHub or SeatGeek. And on the day of the show, usually like hours before, there's a lot of really, really cheap tickets because it's coming from the scalpers who were trying to sell their tickets for like a stupid amount. And then they realize they can't sell it for that. So they're just desperate to get, you know, any little bit of their investment back. So if your money's tight, if you don't want to pay face value, wait till the day of, and just hours before, you can probably get a really decent price for tickets. I've done it so many times. It's great. And this brings me to my last tip. If you really want to go to a show, like you know it, you can't miss it, it's one of your favorite bands, buy a ticket ahead of time. Don't take that risk. Buy it when they go on sale. Have your alarm set. Be on the ticket website. You're going to be so disappointed if you miss out. So yeah, like the tip I just gave is definitely good, but I don't recommend it if like you know that you cannot absolutely cannot miss the show and it's one of your favorite artists. And yeah, just don't take a risk. Grab that ticket ahead of time and then you're all good. But those are my back to concert tips. I'd love to hear what you think about them, so definitely let me know. Maybe I'm missing some. I hope you enjoyed this portion of the episode. We're going to move into the next one with a little chat with Keys and Crates. We talk about their new album, their origins. We talk about cats and dogs, being a pet owner during COVID. We talk about some of the city's landmarks, good food, etc. So yeah, let's move into that now.
There's that creepy computer voice we're used to.
A little too used to it. Well, guys, thanks for joining me on Wavy. This is my first episode back after a little hiatus. So really stoked to have you guys joining me.
Awesome. Awesome. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you so much. How are you guys doing?
Really good.
We're good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine, especially with like things going back to normal. You guys have a tour planned. Yeah, must feel great.
Yeah, we're just happy to see this album coming out.
I think that's the biggest thing.
Totally. How long have you guys been working on it for? Was it delayed because of COVID or?
We've been kind of working on it for 2 to 3 years, I'd say. The album, and I don't know, we've it's gone through a couple reiterations and stuff, and I wouldn't just say it was delayed because of COVID. However, we took that time off during COVID to kind of regroup and, you know, take some much needed downtime, and we hadn't been off the road for about a decade. So I think we just used that time to kind of just breathe a little bit and really sink into the creative process. So COVID was a nice little reset for us.
Wow, a decade. That's making me feel like really, really old because I've been listening to you guys since literally like 2013 and I can't believe that's almost 10 years ago. So
I know, right?
That makes me feel really old. Speaking of which, I feel like your sound has really evolved. I feel like it's a lot more like eclectic and tropical and I love it. Talk to me about this change and like what it was influenced by.
Yeah, I mean, coming off of like Cura and the B tape, we really wanted to kind of cement ourselves like back in dance music, because we are a dance act. And I think we wanted to like make something that felt like dancier than ever. And I think we wanted to make stuff that was a little bit more like groove based and a little bit more dance based, as opposed to like jump up and down at a festival kind of thing, which I think a lot of our older music like captured that energy. It caused us to kind of go up tempo and explore like new grooves. And, you know, we really like, all three of us are a fan of syncopation and just kind of off kilter grooves. And I think a lot of that comes from all of us being fans of like Timberland and like kind of rap from that era that was exploring kind of like tribal rhythms. So we kind of wanted to apply that to dance music in our own way. So we started listening to a lot of like Bali funk and Afro Latin rhythms and like Brazilian, you know, drum lines and all kinds of stuff, and stuff that would have influenced like Timberland and sort of like applying it to dance music. So that's kind of sort of, you know, in terms of like the groove. And then I think in terms of the melodies and the music and the overall vibe, I think we wanted to do records that were really fun, but we also wanted to do records that were really like lush and emotional. So we mm-hmm. tried to make stuff that was super minimal, like the Hawaii Mighty or like Original Classic. And we wanted to make stuff that was also like really lush, like the Take It Off Reprise, or records like that, or like the Lido Pimento, which kind of goes, you know, Siento, like kind of goes between being really lush and maximal and beautiful and really minimal. I think with the three of us, we all like so many different things, but there's like a big, you know, commonality of what we all like. We're always trying to sort of grab what we like and then sort of, you know, all collectively like, and then define the mood of a project. And that's kind of, this is what kind of came out of that, which was this sort of like vibey, soulful, groovy, up-tempo dance project.
Got it. Cool. And when you talk about like these different genres, like, did you guys sort of listen to these intentionally so that your project kind of, you know, take inspiration from these sounds accurately? Or was it something you guys were just already listening to and, you know, naturally took inspiration from, if that makes sense?
Totally. We were already listening to it. We were already playing it in our DJ sets. So for the example of like Bali Funk, like we'll play, you know, Decaps records or like Sango records, which Sango is really an American guy doing that stuff and collabing with people. But we would play stuff like that, and we just play stuff that we liked. And then we would try and tap into those references. Like, I think the same way a band would reference a chord progression, we would reference like grooves, you know, from records that we liked. I don't think we were really worried about doing anything super accurately. I think it was more really taking influence from stuff and doing it our own way. And we knew that kind of in us doing that, we were kind of paying homage in spirit to everything.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I think it really adds like your own unique spin to, you know, these genres, and that's really dope. So speaking of like stepping outside of your box, you know, I find sometimes artists step outside of their box and it can be really a really different experience for their listeners. And point being, what advice can you offer artists who want to step outside of their box? How can they do it tastefully and like, you know, really understand the genre they're trying to hit?
I think just do what you want to do, like at the end of the day. Like, I think like if you do a thing that people like and then you do something else, there's going to be certain people that are like, well, I was just here for that thing that you did that I really liked.
Yeah.
Well, you could lose some of those people. And then there's going to be a percentage of your fan base that's like that. And then there's going to be a percentage of your fan base that's like, I love that they're doing something new. I feel like an underlining commonality between the new stuff and the old stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think you just have to be comfortable losing people and sticking to your vision and doing whatever it is you want to do. And if it translates really well, then it's going to work out really well. And if it's not done really well, then I don't know. But I just think I think like just do what you want to do and just try and do it the best you can do it. And then people are going to come with you or they're not.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is definitely important to just like create what you're passionate about, because when you're not doing that, like people can tell and it's not even a great result as it is. So
I feel like even those fans that think they want the old sound, like if that act doesn't want to make that old sound, they don't actually want the old sound from them. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'd rather hear a record from somebody that even is not necessarily my thing, but that person was passionate about making than hear a record that they think is my thing that they're not yeah, passionate about me. Yeah. It's just yeah. like something for everybody, something for no one, that whole yeah. thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just so important to like, do it well and study it, because I just don't like when artists kind of rush things and then like rush these transitions and then they can come out sounding kind of tacky or like, I don't know, just rushed. So,
you know what? But like, it's funny that you say that, and like, cause so much music now is made so quickly. And I think it's funny, like Rick Rubin posted this quote that I like resonated with me so much, which was, it doesn't matter how long it takes to make a song. Like it just like, it doesn't matter if it takes 2 years or like 2 minutes or 2 hours, the song is independently good or not,
you yeah. know,
independent of that. It doesn't matter if it's like the rawest idea, if it's sometimes the rawest, most unpolished stuff translates so well, you know? So mm-hmm. it's like a really, I've like, it's funny because what you're saying, I agree with, but like, I have a hard time. I've had a hard time with that lately because even listening to some of the Kanye albums, a lot of people criticize it for being rough around the edges, but then like some of it, I'm like, ooh, I like that. I like how rough around the edges it is. So it's weird, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, no, totally. Like I totally get what you're saying. And I definitely have an admiration for that. I just mean when like people are switching over genres and like, don't study it enough. I don't know, but
I would say, well, if you're asking music wise, Gemma, like I would say study the percussion and the tempos. If the artist is trying to switch to a different genre completely, I find a lot of genres are defined by their percussion and the sounds they're using with their drum sounds. So if you're talking from a musical thing to how to kind of switch a genre and do it respectively, I would say, you know, really study the genre sounds and see how you can, I mean, get an idea of the fundamentals of the sounds of what that genre uses, and then try to bring your own spin to it. But, you know, there's a certain reason genres are genres, and it's yeah. because they sound a certain way and they sit in a certain tempo and they sit in a certain thing. So when we're doing genre, you know, a lot of people say that our stuff is bending, blending different genres because we study different genres and what they sound like and what their grooves are. So we can say, oh, let's put this, you know, ballet funk rhythm with a jazz chords, or, you know, let's use, you know, African Afrobeat percussion and blend it with a hip hop groove, right? It's because we're studying these genres and we're trying to figure out literally what makes them a genre. And yeah. It comes down to those little details. So I think sometimes people, they want to switch genres, but they're not actually studying what makes that genre a genre.
Exactly.
You know, so I would say, you know, to any producers, you know, just really listen to a lot of the music in that genre and get an understanding of it from just a pure love of the art form of learning a new style of music, you know? And I think that's what the three of us are. First and foremost, we're really just students of music and we study it, you know, for fans. We just listen. We're like, well, what makes jazz jazz, or what makes a gospel chord a gospel chord, or, you know, what makes ballet funk different from, you know, dance hall or moon baton or Afrobeat? Like, what is it that does that? And the more you spend doing that, the more you can understand how to kind of blend them together. It's like cooking and using different spices, you know? So I think just take the time to really do your research and do your homework on that genre that you're trying to change to.
Yeah, yeah. That's great advice. That's great advice.
Like knowing your reference points for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you guys have any key or unique pieces of gear that were used to make the album?
We started using, once we got back in the studio, we actually started using a lot more analog synth stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the wrapping up of the album.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we were using like the Moog Sub Fatty for some bass stuff. We're a huge fan of the Mellotron, which we actually have a real one of. And yeah, we actually, towards the very end of the album, we started messing with a lot of synthesized arpeggiators, or arpeggiation through analog synths. Yeah. I don't know how to even say that.
I know, just but ARPs. Yeah.
Some ARPs. And we use the MOFO, the Dave Smith MOFO for that.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to be a continuous thing for our next songs, at least I hope.
Yeah, it sounds great.
It sounds really cool. And then also the Juno, which is the Juno 106, which the Roland Juno 106, which we used on like the Hawaii Mighty track, and probably a bunch of others, I can't remember. But yeah, so mostly analog synth stuff.
Maybe on the Lido, possibly for pad sounds.
Yeah.
It could be on that, can't remember. But yeah, we use like a lot of sample banks and like contact instruments always for sounds. And we all use Ableton and like stock Ableton plugins and other like whatever plugins. So
yeah, besides the analog synths, most of the stuff was in the box.
So obviously there's a ton of collaborations on the album, such as Juicy J, Hawaii Mighty, Marble, and more. What has your approach been to collaboration as a group, especially during COVID?
I guess like only one of them actually took place digitally. Which The Original Classic. Original Classic was the only one that took place digitally. I mean, that was like, I think our approach to that specifically was we got something that we were like the base of a record before we brought in all the collaborators. Like we tried to create as much of it as we could, like the idea of it, before we brought everybody in. And we found that really helped in terms of like getting what we were going after. So we wrote a hook with our friend Marble, who's on the record. And once we had that hook with that beat, we knew that vibe was like going to work with like bringing in these other people. We just need to bring in the right people. But yeah, so that was a really kind of like new process that emerged through COVID, and I think we'll probably employ that like going forward,
because
it really works. Yeah, it really works well for certain records. But like all the other records were done in person, like the Lido one was done in person, because we did that post COVID, like kind of towards wrapping up the album. The BB record was done very early. It was actually done like a year before COVID. That record's like almost like 3 years old.
It's a timestamp.
Like I know.
Before COVID 19, after COVID.
Yeah, right.
I feel that.
What's the, oh yeah, Hawaii was done right before COVID, I believe. So yeah, I don't know. I guess a lot of the virtual stuff was kind of between the three of us, like kind of finishing the album and zoning in on what it was. And it was like a lot of Zoom calls and sharing sessions back and forth before we could get in the studio together again. But like, yeah, like with the exception of that one record, like most of the vocal stuff was, I think, done in person. So yeah.
Speaking of COVID and not album related, I know you guys are all pet owners. I am a new pet owner as well, thanks to COVID. I'm wondering,
what'd you get?
I got a little kitty. His name is Benson.
Yes. Great smile.
Yeah.
Ooh, a cat lover.
Yes. Yeah, that's me. he's a very clingy pet, and I think it's because I've been home so much. I'm just wondering, I don't know if you guys adopted pets during COVID or you've been longer pet owners, but like, do you find that your pets are extra clingy because of COVID?
You know, it's funny. We have a dog. So we did talk about the fact that because both of us were working at home, my girl and I, that he got really used to us being at home.
Yeah.
And we were worried about once we were back out, which we are now, you know, how he would do with it. I think, when you look at it from a dog and a pet perspective, COVID was the best time of their lives. They had all their humans at home all the freaking time. It was a party, you know, and now the party's over. So, and I don't know. I really, it's actually a really interesting experiment. I guess we'll have to find out how the pets are doing in a year from now. Because I've heard a lot about that kind of thing about dogs, and I've only heard a few people tell me that cats can be trained to be as clingy as dogs. And it's because everywhere in my neighborhood, everyone's a dog owner, and literally Toronto's, I would say it's like
75% dogs and 25% cats. So like Toon and I both have dogs and Greg has a cat, and I have to go to Greg for any cat info, you know, and I have a few friends that can tell me how cats are. So I don't know, Greg, do you find your cat clingy? Do you find extra?
Kind of the same. Yeah, I think we've developed more routines because I'm around, like morning pets, you know, afternoon jump up on my lap at the laptop, like she'll come in.
Does your cat have a routine in the morning where if you sit down or it'll come to greet you? Or
our cat expects morning pets on our bed every morning. That's a regular thing. But they, like, I don't know, she'll sleep in all different places. She's pretty unpredictable. And I don't know, I just feel like cats in general are like, yeah, you can't really train a cat. It's just going to do what does what it does. It's either clingy or it's not. And sometimes it goes through phase. Sometimes my cat gets really clingy, and then other days she wants very little to do with me. I think they're just on their own wave all the time. And I don't know what the explanation is.
You guys need to buy your pets a friend, or get your, I shouldn't say buy or adopt. Or because like I got my dog a friend, and so now they just have each other, so I don't feel bad leaving them anymore, like before COVID or after COVID.
Yeah that works well,
you know.
Yeah, I am thinking about that. It's just like double the cat hair, you know.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. I'm not trying to have two dogs,
but... I mean, you have to take one dog out. It's no different than taking two, like, you know.
It is you got to pick up two shits now, and you got to
it's not like, you know? I guess. And I have French bulldogs, so they were needy right out the gate. So,
which, by the way, that's the one benefit of cats, is you guys don't have to pick up any of their belongings afterwards. I've never understood how dog owners get those big dogs that have those almost like horse size. You got to do that for their, you know, horse size doo-doo. Yeah. You got to pick that up for the rest of your life. Like some of those Great Danes, I see them walking around. I'm like, that owner is just... adopted a new job picking up crap all day, you know. So
yeah, that's awful.
We got a small dog, so he's you know, it's pretty manageable. But I had to get used to that because it was my girl's dog, and I never used to pick up dog doo-doo, and I was like, you know. But I got used to it now. But having two dogs or three dogs or whatever, and I don't know, too, I couldn't do that.
I mean, if you feed your dog high premium raw food, their shit don't smell, and this is a hack everybody should know. Smelly shit, it's from cheap dog food.
Well, this interview took a left turn, huh?
I really love it, though. Yeah, no, me too. I love animals, so this has been great.
Gemma, do you feed your cat expensive dog or cat food?
Feeds your cat expensive dog food. That's the new thing.
You know what? Like, I don't think it's like the cheapest, but I don't think it's like the most expensive, but I actually just switched to something different the other day, and he has just been like eating it up. Like usually for the past several months, he's been always leaving the food in the bowl, but he's like more eager when it's time to eat, and it's all just gone. And he's been really enjoying it. I don't know what it is, but.
Do you feed your cat dry food or wet? I just heard today from a friend that you have to feed cats wet food, because if you eat them only dry food, they end up getting, it's not good for their stomach or something.
Yeah. So he really loves this dry food. We do wet food a few times throughout the week, but like he's just really into this stuff. So I don't know. Like he's really picky about the wet food. Like he used to eat like whatever we gave him, but he's just getting pickier as the months go on. So
after particular.
Yeah. Very.
Yeah. I've also never understood what makes one cat. Some cats are so quiet and they don't make any noise, and other cats are meowing all day long.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can train your cat not to do that, or to, like, I don't know if that's something that once they pass a certain age, you kind of miss the train or you miss the boat and, or what, or if it's just certain cats breeds are more bark, you know, sorry, more, they do that more than others. So I know dogs, certain dogs are quieter than other dogs. You can kind of almost breed that into them, but I don't know if cats are the same.
Yeah, I don't know. I should probably look into that because my cat is like very talkative. And sometimes it's annoying, but love him. But yeah, hopefully he doesn't listen to this. Anyway, just to wrap things up, just have a few rapid fire questions about Toronto, as you guys are all from Toronto. Favorite restaurant in the city?
Lately for me, it's actually been Chubby's, the Jamaican Caribbean spot down on Portland Street. I've just been really enjoying that. But I'm not particularly picky with a lot of things, but that spot for me, I just like the ambiance and the food is really nice. The food is great.
Cool.
I would say Mother India.
Cool.
Parkdale.
Nice one. I'll go with Donna today.
Cool. Favorite venue?
Man, a lot of the favorite venues are gone now.
I know.
I had a lot of fond memories of the Hoxton playing there. But I guess for concerts, I gotta still just go with Danforth.
Read that. Nice slope.
Yeah, gradual decline.
Gradual decline.
Did you guys say that all on the thing before? Yeah. That was totally. We didn't hear any of that.
Yeah, comfortable stand. It's a comfortable stand. It's a great size room to see like anybody in.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Yeah,
and I like going.
But for sound, I would say Coda.
Yes. Yeah. Love Coda.
Yeah. Coda's sound is like awesome, but yeah, not as comfortable as stand.
Yeah. No, definitely not. This is just like a yes or no one, like a yay or nay. Queen and Spadina, McDonald's.
Depends on what time of my life. My 20s, definitely a yeah. Right now, no. Definitely a nah.
No, not really.
With what? What's
Queen and Spadina?
McDonald's.
I appreciate what it stands for, you know, like, but not trying to go there anymore. You know, like it has its place. It has its place in Toronto culture and in downtown. I think we all have memories of that spot. I would say the one for me that was the more memorable is the one at Bathurst and King. It's gone now, but Bathurst and King was
legendary. People literally throwing chairs in there. Like that. both of those locations are like no fly zones for me, man. They're too intense. Like this just like shit is just popping off all over the place. Like I'm just trying to get like a Big Mac and like hairs flying and shit. It's like that shit, man. Too old for that.
Yeah, no, I feel you. Favorite hidden gem. This is like very subjective. It can be anything.
Oh, I'll say the Udon Fuzz Jazz Bar that's in Kensington Market.
I've been meaning to go there.
What's that?
I've been meaning to go there, actually.
Yeah, it's a lot of people still aren't aware of it. It's an Armenian bar. It's got a dope jazz scene in the back in the patio, and it's very unknown yet. But the music is top-notch, and the food and everything is really good.
Nice.
I would say the Drum. That's my little hidden gem.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's an Eastern European bar that plays like, they play stuff like you could hear dub in there, but you could also hear like a blues band, but you could also hear a jazz band, and whatever it is always good. And the people that work there are just like a family. So it's just like good vibes, right? From like trying to get in, to getting a table, to chilling out there. It's just like good vibes all the time.
Sweet.
I'll go with a food spot because I'm so food driven.
Nice.
Asian Legend on Dundas. Northern Chinese food. They have soup dumplings. And I would say that they're pretty good. Pretty good.
Better than Yummy Dumpling?
I think on par. I think Yummy Dumplings is also a hidden gem.
It is.
It's amazing. You said
dumplings. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. I feel like more people actually know about Yummy Dumplings.
Yeah, that's true.
Asian Legend is kind of like the sit down version of that. Like you get like a whole menu of that kind of food. But Yummy Dumplings is amazing. Like that place is also definitely.
Is that the one on Dundas and Spadina? Yeah,
that's the one that we went to that time after the photo shoot.
Yeah,
that place is great.
Oh my god. So good.
Sweet. Well, thank you guys so much. For everyone listening, please check out their latest album, Original Classic. It'll be out by the time this interview comes out. Do you guys have any final words or plugs about the album or anything?
No, I hope you like it.
If this is Toronto based, I guess we'll see you guys. We're playing at the Velvet November 27th. Just any, you know, let them know we're playing at the Velvet the 27th. We're really excited to kind of finally get to play our new album. And hope to see you guys out.